It began inauspiciously, as events often do. A routine Adeptus Mechanicus exploratory survey of the planetary volume of the Tyran system had been ordered as part of standard Imperial record-keeping protocols. What the survey found, however, was far from routine. Planetary bodies, previously recorded as being bountiful in life, were discovered scoured of anything remotely organic. They were utterly sterile, even down to the bacterial level, not even the single, smallest living organism having survived whatever fate befell them. One such scouring would have been cause for immediate investigation, but the explorators discovered a trail of such worlds, one planet after another, previously biodiverse, now cold and lifeless. Majos Varnak, overseer of the Adeptus Mechanicus research station on Tyran itself, immediately reported these findings to the Mechanicus's Explorator General. The reports were never responded to. No word was returned to Tyran Outpost from the Priests of Mars. Historators have posited one of two explanations for this. The first being the infamous Shadow on the Warp, a psychic blackout effect that precedes the coming of the High Fleets like a sinister bow wave. Known to render astropathic communication difficult to impossible, it is likely that the Shadow had already cut the Tyran station from all psychic contact with the Imperium. It is equally likely that, given the Imperium's crammed communication channels and staggeringly ponderous bureaucracy, that the message was either lost in transit or simply filed as a non-priority item by the Adeptus Mechanicus. No investigation is believed to have been launched. Given what was to occur afterwards, other priorities clearly eclipsed the concerns of why a message had not been replied to. Know then that this is a record of the coming of the Great Beast, a conflict that would change the face of the Imperium and nearly put to an end some of its most hallowed defenders. A record of the First Tyrannic War. Located 60,000 light-years from Holy Terra to the galactic southeast of Great Ultramar, Tyran Primus's outpost was a sterling example of Adeptus Mechanicus frontier construction. The fortress was built deep into an ancient chain of volcanic islands, utilizing the rock formations and its own ferrocrete and adamantium to protect its inhabitants from the ocean world's massive storms, as well as a predatory oceanic megafauna that dwelt within the depths. Four Bastion defense lasers provided cover to a massive airspace approach, and void shield generators rendered it hardened against orbital bombardments. To further ward off piratical raiders, a full regiment of the Astra Militarum's Catachan jungle fighters were stationed on world, veterans of dozens of campaigns now granted the reprieve of garrison duty. These were further augmented by Skitarii divisions, and in orbit hung three Endeavour light cruisers with three full wings of Thunderbolt fighters aboard. It was a standard and robust deployment for an Imperial frontier station. The Tyran outpost was well equipped to handle almost any threat that limit space could throw at it. Except, of course, for what was coming. During a routine system survey, Majos Varnak was waylaid by a drifting cloud of what, for all the world, appeared to be mines. A sensorium sweep had registered these things as biological, but closer investigation led to the bizarre fleshy organisms exploding with munitions-grade force, severely damaging Varnak's vessel and forcing it to retreat to Tyran just as its Auspex grids detected a massive warp breach at the system's Mandeville point. Objects had emerged from the Immaterium, so dense that they registered as a cloud on the display screens. They were worse, making wake towards Tyran Primus. The outpost's defenses were rushed to full. Within a week, the first of the invaders hurled themselves at the orbital batteries. No communications were made, despite hails being delivered in the cloud's general direction. Visual contact delivered a possible answer. These ships were organic. They were spaceborne lifeforms, unlike anything the Adeptus Mechanicus or the Imperium had ever encountered. They came in a dizzying array of sizes and genuses, yet even the smallest was a match for an Imperial picket monitor, and the largest eclipsed in tonnage even Apocalypse-class battleships. For over an hour, the laser batteries of the outpost reaped a staggering tally of kills, warding the orbital approaches and ultimately driving the creatures into what appeared to be a retreat. Majos Varnak, unwilling to allow the wounded predators to escape, ordered the outpost's light cruisers to pursue. The Imperial vessels followed the bioships into an increasingly dense cloud of what appeared to be living spores, until, breaching a wall within this, discovered to their horror that the bioships were but a dozen of a fleet of creatures, the number of which simply could not be identified. Within minutes, the cruisers were swarmed by the invaders, and all contact was lost. Emergency missives were ordered dispatched to all nearby Imperial and Mechanicus outposts. But Tyran was quite isolated, and even still, the effort to do so nearly killed the base's astropath. The shadow in the warp had utterly enveloped Tyran. All communication was now impossible. Mycetic spores began to fill the skies above the outpost, blotting out the system's sun in their numbers. Living shells of hardened chitin, the spores were an attack insertion vector for the invaders, hardened to withstand the stresses of orbital drops and able to disgorge dozens of creatures from within themselves. Into the oceans these spores plummeted, and the base was soon beset by swarms of seemingly endless organisms. The creatures first came in waves against all points of the outpost, held back by defense turrets and disciplined last-fire volleys from the Catachans. But they appeared quite adept at identifying hardpoint lines in the fortifications, shifting their attacks to overwhelm weapon emplacements until the mere human soldiery were facing them. Naught could be done. The attackers would not cease, and the gates were soon breached. Knowing death had come, Majos Varnak committed all records of the attack into a data codex, to be dropped to the very bottom of the outpost's geothermal energy extraction vents, far below the surface. The codex contained the Majos's final words, a warning to humanity of what had occurred. "We cannot live through this. Mankind cannot live through this. In a single day, they have covered this planet with a flood of living blades and needle-fanged mouths. Kill one and 10 take its place. If they are truly without number, then our race is doomed to a violent death before every shred of our civilization is scoured away by a force more voracious than the fires of hell themselves. Death by the machine god. Death is here." It would be more than a year before the fate of Tyran was discovered by the Imperium, and only done so thanks to the investigations launched by Inquisitor Fidus Cryptman of the Ordo Xenos. Having intercepted the reports of dead worlds initially delivered to the Explorator General, Cryptman's journey to the Eastern Fringe meant he arrived far too late to encounter the invaders, but well within time to discover their impact. He and his team uncovered the same dead worlds the Mechanicus had, but one more had been added to the list. Tyran Primus itself, now scoured as the others had been, even its mighty oceans drained away to dust. Further investigation allowed Kryptman to uncover Majos Varnak's codex, and the contents utterly appalled him. The scale of the threat appeared wholly unlike anything the Ordo Xenos had ever encountered. There was no accurate read on the enemy's fleet numbers. The Auspex screeds Varnax committed to record showed a count that seemed incomplete by the time it had reached the higher hundreds of thousands. That a year had passed since this invasion was a horror in and of itself. Kryptman had no ways of predicting how fast the enemy could travel, within the warp or at sublight speeds. The Ordos, and the Senatorum Imperialis, would need to be informed with all possible haste. Majos Varnak's Data Codex was committed as the foundational record for Kryptman's own chronicle of this strange new enemy, one he named after the dead world he now departed. The Tyranids. The nearest system with communication capabilities matching Kryptman's urgency and needs was Thandros, a mining system where the Adeptus Astra Telepathica Matrix orbited the lead planet. A missive from Kryptman was immediately delivered to the Matrix, intended to be forwarded to his colleagues amongst the Ordo Xenos. The message, as reported by his astropath, had failed to be received. Making full speed for Thandros, Kryptman and his retinue discovered it, too, was now lifeless and destroyed, devoured by the invaders, no trace of Imperial settlement remaining save for dusty ruins and collapsed mining tunnels. The Inquisitor, however, managed to salvage the Matrix, repairing it to a basic functionality powerful enough to transmit Varnak's codex and his own treatise to the Ordo Xenos. His astropath, nearly dead from exhaustion and mental strain, delivered within days news Kryptman had been desperate to receive. His inquisitorial superiors had received the codex and the warning, and issued him new orders to make immediately for McCrag, homeworld of the Ultramarines Astartes chapter, and a locus for the chapter's rule over their realm of Ultramar. As a major Imperial stronghold within the galactic southeast, Ultramar would be the crux of any Imperial response, and, as the Ordo Xenos supposed, likely a prime target for the Tyranid invaders. Per Ordo tradition, the size and scale of the enemy befitted its codification with the term from human legend, a word whose original meaning was lost beyond connotations of great size and immense threat. Behemoth. As students of the Tyranid species are no doubt aware, this particular vile Xenos threat is extragalactic. They are not of our precious galaxy. They are beyond, drawn to our worlds from out of the gulfs of intergalactic space. We have no means of discerning how old they are. We do not know if ours is the first, the second, or merely another in a sequence of numberless entries that they have consumed. Behemoth's insertion into our galactic plane was directly from the southeast, approaching the disk of the galaxy entirely laterally. It did not only consume Tyran and Thandros in those initial years, numerous other worlds suffered similar fates. An Imperial observation station dubbed Oculus, itself situated on a living bio-artifact claimed by the Imperium following the War of the Beast, was wholly obliterated by the High Fleet. A tendril of Behemoth encountered the Necron tomb world of Solemnance, a planet claimed by the then-active Nihilak dynasty. Later Imperial research observes the tendrils moving around the planetary space volume, as Necron worlds present no opportunities to harvest biomass, and the Necrons themselves are fearsome opponents, the Tyranid hive mind wishes to waste none of its potential combating them. However, given the volume in which Solemnance dwells is bereft of many worlds, Behemoth's tendrils soon found itself deep within interplanetary space, lapsing into hibernation and engaging in sublight drift to conserve the bioship's resources. Upon the world of Jaga, orcoid pirates known as the Star Crumpas had the dubious honor of being their species' first point of contact with the Tyranids, at least that the Imperium is aware of. Their fleet of kill cruisers, once the bane of Imperial shipping lanes in the region, was demolished by the oncoming behemoth, and the mycelial species ingested into the hive. Captain Blackgit, the leader of the clan, effected an escape, only to be later caught and similarly devoured by yet another tendril of behemoth. Eldari rangers from Craftworld Melantai, perceiving the shadow in the warp, investigated the High Fleet's approach, and in abject horror bade their craft world escape its path. Scrying all possible futures, the perfidious farseers of that craft world concurred immediately. Humanity could fend for itself. First populous Imperial world to feel the ravages of the Tyranids was the planet of Prandium, known as the jewel in Ultramar's crown. Having long since recovered from its use as a training facility during the Horus Heresy, Prandium was technically classified as an agri-world under administratum guidelines, but the stewardship of the Ultramarines, and their political clout, had prevented the world from being turned into the nearly toxic monocrop hellscape that most Imperial agri-worlds are. It was, in fact, the epitome of the propaganda image of an Imperial agri-world. A lush, gentle paradise favored by the social elites of Ultramar for agri-tourism. But, despite the favor it held, it was naught but a breaking of the fast for Behemoth. Not even the atmosphere escaped the High Fleet's consumption. Its Ultramarines garrison was forced to withdraw against the enemy's abominable numbers, fleeing the system to bring further word to McCrag of the enemy that they now faced. Several elements of the Ultramarian fleet, responding to Prandium's distress calls, were intercepted by vanguard organisms from Behemoth and wiped out utterly. It was now effectively assured that the homeworld of the Chapter was the target for Behemoth, insofar as a seemingly mindless apex predator hive could select a target. The passage of the High Fleet showed the alien juggernaut making directly for the Ultramarines' Chapter Fortress. For the Chapter, this was both boon and curse. Their world was a citadel in all respects, a storied homeworld of a first founding legion, a planet that had outlasted 10 millennia of strife and war and risen above all to prosper, like few had. Its influence and prestige ranked it amongst the most famous planets in the Imperium. Its defenses were second to but a few. Yet Behemoth's extent was still largely unknown. The Imperium had dispatched precious little in the way of military forces to engage or stymie its approach. The High Fleet's capabilities were clearly world-destroying. Ultramarines officers were working on theoreticals that accounted for the potential of their forces to simply run out of ammunition in the face of a swarm attack. McCrag still remained the Imperium's best hope of stopping the passage of the Hive Fleet. It was the most powerful world in the local volume. Should Behemoth break the planet, there was little in the way that could stand against it. Victory was by no means assured. The loss of Prandium had shocked Ultramarines Chapter Master Marnius Kalgar. For one, the High Fleet was far further into Ultramarian space than anticipated. An Imperial reinforcement task force from Battlefleet Tempestus had been dispatched from Baca, and its arrival date was hitherto unknown. Ultramar was to be forced to defend for itself. The Chapter Master withdrew all possible Astartes and naval assets to the defense of McCrag, including elements from both the Chapter's fleet and the Imperial Navy. Every single space-worthy vessel was impressed into service. Chartist captains were forced to surrender any armed vessel in orbit to the naval auxilia, and any unarmed ship was considered suitable to be transformed into a munition-loaded fireship, delivered like a massive torpedo into the heart of the swarm. Rogue traders and privateers were hired at the expense of the Chapter, or strong-armed or blackmailed into service. Planetary defenses were likewise augmented as quickly as possible, with the Ultramarines carefully laying out concentric lines of fortifications that allowed for clinical withdrawals to the planet's twin polar fortresses. Should the situation come to it, the Chapter and its Astra Militarum Auxilia would hold fast within these citadels until Imperial reinforcements, hopefully, arrived. McCrag was now a fortress on par with any the Imperium could claim, attended to by a strong force of arms as was at large in the galaxy. Any other foe would have balked at such an opponent. Behemoth slowed not one bit. With neither delay nor doubt, the Tyranids barreled into the system, sweeping aside outer planetary defense platforms with ease and making straight for the Chapter homeworld. Star Nova-class orbital weapon stations spoke first. The longest-ranged weapons batteries in the system tore holes into the swarm, tallying several bioships with each firing, yet such was the quantity of the enemy that any gaps in their lines were simply filled as quickly as they were opened. Next came the batteries of the battleships. Imperial capital ships, ultramarine battle barges, strike cruisers, frigates, every gun that could target the enemy fired at will. There were so many in the skies, targeting solutions were negligible. No one could miss. In a risky maneuver, but a prudent one in the face of the numberless mass intending to make orbit, Kalgar ordered the dispatching of the fleet into a wide circular arc, essentially allowing the Tyranids into orbit and permitting them to launch landings. The Chapter Master, heeding Inquisitor Kryptman's advice, reckoned that the planetary biomass was the aliens' truest objective. The super-predator would likely ignore anything not directly in its path. The logic, here, proved sound. Imperial starships were able to continue punishing the High Fleet relatively uncontested. But now, the skies of Ultramar began to darken with the falling of mycetic spores. Mechanicus Logis engines attempted to pinpoint the descent vectors of the spore pods, allowing ultramarine strike teams to intercept them as soon as possible wherever they made planetfall. Between these interceptions, the firepower of defense batteries, and the orbiting ships, the Chapter was initially able to stymie the first of the landings, corralling and containing alien beasts before annihilating them as quickly as possible. Yet even such leadership could only last for so long, and soon the first breakouts occurred. Genestealer Vanguard organisms successfully infiltrated the Sikoroku starport, bursting from the underground sewers to slaughter the defenders and pilots on the ground, and devastating a linchpin of the planet's aerial defenses. While the Chapter itself still possessed significant quantities of flyers, the loss of so many Aeronautica, Interceptor, and Bomber wings was a crucial blow to their military capabilities, one that the Swarm was now exploiting with waves of spore drops. Forced to muster his forces, Kalgar withdrew ultramarine elements to the now infamous Cold Steel Ridge. As a defense ground on, a marked change in character emerged in the swarm. The attacking Termagants and Hormigaunts now flowed with a seemingly cannier intelligence, probing, retreating, and exploiting in a seemingly tactical fashion. They no longer appeared to be animals. They now were more like soldiers, operating in an even closer coherence with the larger kindred beasts. A combined arms approach that was rivaling, and in some areas, eclipsing, Astartes field commanders. Ravener tunneling organisms burst forth from the frosty earth right in the middle of the defense's left flank, separating ultramarine squads from the Militarum Auxilia. Responding to the assault, the second company of the Chapter brought with them fury and steel, punishing the emergent beasts for their audacity, but not nearly in enough time to save the beleaguered guardsmen who had been wholly overwhelmed by Hormigaunt assault creatures. Unwittingly, the second company's movements and subsequent purge of this assault had exposed the Baneblade super heavy tank Pride of Hera to attack, and the machine was subsequently set upon by an assault wave of Carnifexes, the Tyranid equivalent to a line battle tank. This was but one example of the approach the Tyranids were now taking, an approach that Khalgar himself was able to succeed in stymieing, but became grimly aware that something altogether different was now at play in the battle. The Astartes and the Auxilia were beset on all fronts by a dizzying array of creatures acting in total concert. Harpy and gargoyle strains picked off guardsmen units one by one, cannily targeting officers first, severely disrupting the chain of command and morale. Spore-shaped artillery fired from bio-vores fell upon the Imperial elements like rain, forcing redeployments, only for then isolated units to be prey for burrowing Trigons and Morlocks. Khalgar was a peerless tactician himself. He readily adapted to each new threat, theoretical spinning into practical at lightning speed, containing and annihilating the attacking Xenos, but this was a battle of quantity, not quality. And, with the sinister force animating them, the Tyranids were adapting to Khalgar's reprisal tactics as fast as the Chapter Master could tabulate them. It was at this point that the beast revealed itself. The Swarm Lord. This is, of course, the name the Imperium would latterly grant it after its nature was documented and codified by the Ordo Xenos. The creature itself has no name. Tyranids are not individuals, or even self-named as a collective. The term hive mind is again an Imperial appellation. We do not know what they call themselves, or if they call themselves. The Swarm Lord is not precisely an individual, more of a unique expression of the hive mind. It has been theorized by the Adeptus Mechanicus and the Ordo Xenos as being effectively a stress response of the Tyranid Gestalt, a reflexive creation, when the hive mind encounters a foe of especially tenacious military capabilities. The Gestalt distills into this offshoot entity its combined eternities of warfare. It is quite possible that the Swarm Lord has overseen the destruction by force of armies from countless civilizations. It is granted more mental autonomy than any other Tyranid bioform in the hive mind's endless drive to consume everything in its path as efficiently as possible. The beast is also no mere tactician. It is a biogenetic juggernaut of fearsome martial prowess, capable of titanic swordsmanship with its blade limbs that make it a match for the galaxy's most renowned duelists. It set Marnius Khalgar in its sights. Just as its will directed the removal of officers across Auxilia and Astartes, so now did the Swarm Lord consider its wisest course of action to be combat with the Chapter Master. Its attack was precisely timed. Although Khalgar fought valiantly, he faced an enemy unlike anything he had ever reckoned with. A Chapter Master that had slain Drukhari Archons, Dark Lords of the Chaos Gods, Demons of the Warp, and alien monstrosities beyond count, could not stand before the living embodiment of the Hive. Khalgar was rent asunder, his body sorely wounded, and only the arrival of his honor guard, delayed by hordes of Tyranid swarms up to this point, saved his life. Even this was not enough. Thunderhawk gunship flights, meant to evacuate the Ultramarines as a whole, were now forced to lay down covering fire to effect the Chapter Master's extraction, at a terrible cost in lives to the assembled, retreating Astartes. Khalgar's ruined but still living body was brought to orbit, aboard the still-fighting battle barge Octavius. In the void, the tide was turning even quicker than on the ground. The battle barge Caesar had already been claimed by the Tyranid bioships. The breach in the lines its loss had caused, resulting in the further loss of most of the impressed merchantmen and fireships. The ninth wave of Tyranids finally claimed the last of the orbital defense platforms, those that had not been winnowed into dust transformed into charnel pits by Tyranid boarding organisms. The bioships of the Hive Mind were as perfectly adapted for the void as their swarms ravaging Macragge were for planets. Armored spacefaring creatures with grasping tentacled maws, acidic cannons, spore throwers, and all manner of hideous bioform weaponry besides. Kalgar's plan to draw the swarm fleet into orbit had succeeded. Yet, now so plentiful were the bioships that the Imperial warships were being isolated and surrounded, fighting for their lives against endless clouds of void predators. On the ground, the Polar fortresses were now wholly exposed, with all Imperial elements planetside withdrawing to their relative safety. Observing this concentration of force, the Hive Mind unleashed millions more spores directly into the polar regions. Kalgar, having recovered enough to receive reports of the mycetic deluge, took command of what nearby vessels yet functioned, and attempted to mount interdiction actions on the bioships launching the most spores. Having judged its ground forces now significantly deployed, the Hive Mind moved its bioships into withdrawal vectors, appearing for all the world to be making out system. Kalgar judged it a base animalistic font. In this case, he was entirely correct, but opted nevertheless to take the bait, harrowing the Hive fleet all the way to the planet Circe in Macragge's outer volume. In the near space of this ringed world, both sides now reckoned themselves predator and the other prey. Kalgar, having received signals indicating the arrival of Battlefleet Tempestus at the Mandeville Point, sought to pin the Hive ships between his vessels and the reinforcements. The Tyranids, meanwhile, had concealed an ambush fleet in the rings of Circe, bioships floating in near-suspended animation amongst the ice. As history would have it, the Tyranids sprang their trap first, seizing upon Kalgar's flotilla with cornered viciousness and wicked cunning. Tempestus's arrival evened the proverbial odds, yet the Battle of Circe was an extremely dangerous gamble on Kalgar's part. The day was only carried thanks to the sacrifice of the ancient Emperor-class battleship Dominus Astra. Having sustained mortal damage from a half-score of Hive ships, and with its decks overrun by rampaging gene-stealer boarders, the captain ordered a flank-speed charge into the swarm's heart, detonating the ship's warp engines and opening a real space rupture in the process. Barely escaping, the Imperial ships fled the tear in reality, watching through emergency Geller viewers as the Tyranids were themselves consumed by the fury of a warp space dislocation vortex. While victory had been clawed back in the void, on the northern polar ice fields of Macragge, the resolve of the Ultramarines chapter was being tested more sorely than any time since the darkest days of the Horus Heresy. The entire first company of the chapter, laureled veterans to a man, held each and every chench and bastion to the last possible moment. Ranged against them was a living tide of chitinous organisms, a seismic movement of bodies replete with bladed limb, acid maw, and venom-spewing appendage. Heavy emplacements fired until their barrels warped from heat discharge. Ammunition silos ran dry or became clogged by the flocking bodies of ruined gargoyles. The swarm was the Hydra of ancient Grecia, an endless serpent with regenerating heads. What ships remained in orbit spent the last of their payloads in punitive bombardments. The god engines of the Legio Praetor engaged bio-titans, or reaped untold kills amongst the tidal wave of xenoforms, yet still the swarm came. They used their own dead as cover, or as grim, living ramps to assault the highest walls they came across. They dragged down whole titans by sheer weight of numbers. The tale was the same in the southern reaches. The Fortress of Angels became the last refuge of that pole's garrison, where the inhabitants resigned themselves to the grimmest of all fates. It was to the Northern Pole, however, that the Hive Mind had committed the fury of the Swarm Lord, and through this creature's twisted genius were the walls of that final holdfast now breached. Amongst the corridors cramped to cavernous, the hordes of the Hive poured in, ranged now against Terminator-armored Ultramarines elite, led by First Company Captain Invictus. The fighting in these corridors were an ominously prescient specter of Astartes' Space Hulk purgation operations in the centuries to come. Impossibly tight environs where indomitable gen-hanced humanity brought fire and fury to Xenos horrors beyond imagination. What Helm vid captures survive within Ultramarine's archives demonstrate a mindless blur of pure violence. There is not a second of footage where a First Company veteran is not surrounded by dozens of bioforms simultaneously, breaking their claws upon his armor or feeling the rage of his storm bolter. Yet, as with all things against the swarm, quantity is quality. Even the hallowed suits of tactical dreadnought armor these veterans wore could only withstand so many blade limbs, and even a Space Marine strength can only best so many opponents. A similar fate to that suffered by the Legio Praetor's Titans, albeit in miniature, began to play out in these Stygian depths. As the tunnels rang to alien shrieks, Imperial gunfire, and the roars of Astartes bellowing vicious invectives at the hated enemy. When Marnius Kalgar's flotilla, seconded now by Battlefleet Tempestus's might, arrived in orbit over McCrag, the carnage they beheld was unspeakable. As Kalgar departed the Octavius for the surface, reports were flooding in from across the globe. Miraculously, the southern polar fortress had withstood, ending the swarm and turning it back. The northern fortress, however, was only relieved by the mass deployment of the 3rd and 7th companies of the Ultramarines, arriving in orbital insertion with all the fury of Astartes scorned. The ice and snow were almost entirely obscured by corpses. For every human that lay dead, there were 1,000,000 Tyranids. Yet the situation only grew more grim as the 3rd Company sought to bring reprieve to the core citadel. There, in the carcass-choked tunnels, the Ultramarines beheld the grim evidence of the last stand of their veteran brothers, the most lauded of whom had fought to the last man in the deepest genitorum chambers. Such was the weight of alien bodies pressing in upon them that not a single Terminator had actually fallen to the ground. Their tonnage was held aloft by the sheer pressure of so many bodies of slain enemies. It has been surmised by Tacticae Historators that the truest threat of High Fleet Behemoth was ended in the ice rings of Circe with the sacrifice of the Dominus Astra. Bereft of their hive ships, the swarm could no longer replenish itself, or new drone forms created with which to assail the Imperium. The only question to be asked following the destruction of the bioships was whether McCrag would be lost to the Xenos in kind. Blessed by the Emperor, this was not the case. The major population centers of the planet had been largely spared the attention of the swarms of attack creatures. Whether by the direction of the Swarm Lord or the Hive Mind itself, the Tyranids had prioritized the destruction of the Ultramarines and their military assets over the active consumption of the world's population. The chapter had suffered grievously for it. The First Company had been lost to a man. Many of the most priceless relic armors had been lost along with them, or would require decades of repair in the hands of the most skilled machine priests. The First Company would remain undermanned for over a century, until it was finally considered fully repopulated by 861 M41. The chapter's fleet elements were sorely reduced, as was Ultramar's own naval defense auxilia. It would be many years before McCrag was considered cleansed of the Xenos taint. Due to the chapter's commitments galaxy-wide, It fell upon the third company, augmented by members of the Blood Angels chapter, to scour the poles for the last of the aliens. Under the leadership of Chaplain Cassius of the Third, who had fought in the relief of the Northern Polar Fortress, Kalgar ordered the creation of a specialized force of Tyrannic War veterans, squads of Astartes with keen experience in fighting the Xenos. The formation of a division of Ultramarines that did not lie within the diktats of the hallowed Codex Astartes prompted a near schism within the chapter, one healed only by Kalgar's phenomenal force of personality and the appeals of those who had fought with the great behemoth upon their home world. Of Behemoth itself, splinter fleets yet existed, and creatures yet lay entombed within the ice of Macragg. Tendrils, such as the Court of the Nephilim King, the Crimson Maw, and the Cordex strain, remain extant even to this day, yet, of course, sorely reduced in capacity and capabilities from the initial invasion that Behemoth represented. Many splinter fleets were hunted down by vengeful Imperial Navy task forces, as well as the Ordo Xenos and the alien-hunting Death Watch, or the Ultramarines and their successors, eager as they were to purge the stain of the creatures from the galaxy and recoup their honor. The Adeptus Mechanicus descended on Macragge en masse, cataloging and dissecting and codifying each separate strain of the Tyranid macro-organism under the watchful eyes of Inquisitor Kryptman and a coven of Xenos Inquisitors. Indeed, samples of Behemoth would be removed to an inquisitorial facility on Anfelion for genetic sequencing, although the tale of that world's infamous project must wait for a future chronicle. Kryptman would brook no stone unturned in his fervent desire to ensure that all possible knowledge of the aliens be studied and understood, and disseminated as widely as possible across the Imperium. He insisted that this was not the end. The foe would return, he said, and the Imperium must be prepared. Yet, as the decades ground on, as new foes emerged and old ones returned, as the splinters of Behemoth were steadily purged, the Imperium was content to believe that the Tyranid threat, such as Behemoth represented, was a matter for the past. Would that it were so simple. Would that the Imperium knew that Behemoth represented not one iota of the true scale of the creature that was emerging from beyond the stars. Would that it could have possibly been comprehended, the sheer cyclopean horror the Imperium would begin to face in the years to come. The first Tyrannic War had been ended, yet it was only the first. Until such a time as one may relate further chronicles for your elucidation, Ave Imperator, Gloria in Excelsis Terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @oculusimperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.